to be one of my colleagues. Chris is a physician now at the Baltimore Medical System, which is a federally qualified health center where he practices primary care and refugee health in Baltimore. He graduated from Michigan State University College of Human Medicine in 2010 and then went on to complete a combined residency in internal medicine and pediatrics. And he will be sharing his experiences with us now.
So we're almost there. Everybody just take a few breaths. We're going to get there in 15 minutes. So I have the pleasure of coming after four excellent presentations and four excellent programs. And so what I'm going to be doing is skipping a lot of my introduction because we've already talked about a lot of those things. The other thing is that I have to ask you guys a favor, and it's we need to switch perspective a little bit. So I'm going to be talking about what myself and my partners have been doing, and it's basically trying to combine these short-term experiences and coming up with general standards and principles that we can apply to all of them. So these are, and listed here are all of my collaborators. I have no disclosures. So what we're going to be talking about today is STEG, or short-term experiences in global health. And fortunately, that was already done by Dr. Cherniak, so we can skip a lot of that. And I know what a lot of you are thinking. You're thinking, gosh, I've never heard this term before, and now I come to this meeting, and I've heard it twice in the last hour. And it's actually because we have a lot of the same collaborators. So we're going to be talking about background, but really, as I told you, I'm going to be skipping a lot of that so we can get to the more important later slides where I describe our principles and the next steps that we can do to make global health more effective and efficient. So short-term experience in global health can mean a variety of things, as we've already heard. And it's also interesting that Dr. Cherniak had a picture of Machu Picchu, because I have a picture of Machu Picchu. But what this means is, so these terms that are thrown out, international health, global health rotation, things like that, sometimes they mean the same thing, but depending on the perspective of the person, student, professor, or doctor traveling, it may have different meanings. And I think that's what this slide shows. So my collaborators and I have come up with a definition for STEG as the myriad of programs in which medicine, public health, education, outreach, etc., in some way offer help, assistance, or health resources to an international community, which is a whole lot of words, and it sounds really confusing, and hopefully in the next 10 minutes I'll be able to tell you more details about that. So just some background that I'm going to go through. It's already been established that there are a lot of medical students that participate in global health experience. And this is actually data that's several years old, and we know that it's increasing, so I imagine that now it is more than 50% of medical students are now traveling. The existing medical literature involving STEG are limited. And what I mean by that is not necessarily that the number isn't there, because there's medical literature about short-term experiences, but a lot of it, a majority of it, is limited to essays, reflection pieces, or case reports. And so what our group decided was, well, let's look at the literature, let's take our brains, which though individually are limited, but together is much better, and let's come up with some principles that we can apply to define how to efficiently, effectively, and ethically perform these short-term experiences. So global health timeline, we're going to go back to 1850, and one of the first medical missionaries, Dr. David Livingstone, started spreading Christianity while also performing obstetrical procedures in Central Africa. Several years down the road, the Red Cross was founded, more secular approach. And the Red Cross still exists. They still have the same model. Another organization that has adopted that model is MSF, or Doctors Without Borders. Toward the end of the decade, the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine started treating ill travelers from Asia and Africa, hence tropical medicine. And in addition to treating patients, there was a great deal of research. And they actually, the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine, through that special program, was able to link mosquitoes to malaria. And then a couple world wars happened, and then after that we had the World Health Organization. So after the WHO, this was revolutionary at the time. So basically the WHO said, you know those stethoscopes that you've been using? Well, let's throw those away, because those don't really cause great changes on a big level. What really does is policy and infrastructure, and that's where the WHO came in. So then in the 1970s and 80s, international travel became much easier, became cheaper, and people said, you know, I really like my stethoscope. I'm going to take it to me and go to other places. And so throughout the 70s, 80s, 90s, you see this surge in people in training starting to travel a lot. So finally in the 2000s, we start to put the brakes on and we say, whoa, let's slow down a little bit. First of all, we changed the term. So international medicine used to be very popular. Now we hear this global health. It sounds much better. I have no idea what we're going to call it in 20 years, but global health for now. The other thing was we started to reflect more on how to better approach global health. And I think we're entering a very exciting time in global health. And I can certainly know that for sure, considering all of the wonderful programs we've already heard. So our objective was that, as a team, develop a set of guidelines and principles for the implementation of STEG worldwide. Now, that was a daunting task, so we decided to focus ourselves a little, and we were specifically focusing on the academic setting. So anything that would be, for example, done through a church or religious organization, we're not talking about that. We thought it would be too complex to try to lump everything together, so this is just through academic settings. So let's get to what we did. We came up with four principles. They're listed on this slide, but I'm going to expand in detail on all of them in the next slides. So it is imperative to embed short-term experiences in global health within efforts focused on sustainable development and measurable community health gains. So a lot of my previous speakers have been talking about that. So I won't go into too much detail. But the sustainability there is really key. Now, not only for having long-term programs in years, but also there should be a shift on chronic illnesses, thinking about chronic illnesses rather than just going and fixing a few acute illnesses. And I think that's happening right now. Next, short-term experiences should be part of larger projects that promote sustainable local capacity building and health system strengthening. So this is the infrastructure piece. This is working with local organizations, using community resources, not necessarily the resources that Western countries are bringing, but working and collaborating with people and organizations that are already in the host countries. Bidirectional participatory relationships. Biraj, I can't explain this point any better, so I'm just going to skip. Okay. Last, humility and cultural competency are critical components of developing and sustaining successful short-term experience of global health. Okay, so a lot of what I'm saying, you're saying, well, Chris, this is all self-explanatory and you're just stating the obvious. And I'm glad that you're thinking that. But you have to remember that we're in a select group here. And because you're here already, you've already been having these thoughts. But I want to mention that even the most compassionate, the most aware, and the most culturally competent person can still have flaws in this regards. And I could probably talk about several examples, but I'm going to list two. And one is going to be vague, and one will be specific. So the vague one is you can go to another country and practice medicine or treat patients the exact same way that you would in your own country. And it might not be the correct way. So that's the vague way. Specific way, I'll give you a personal example. So I see a lot of refugees in my clinic, and recently we've been having a lot of Muslim refugees. And I found out very quickly that my approach to the physical exam in certain sects of Muslim women has to be completely altered. And I wasn't doing anything that I thought was offensive, but I actually was. And I won't give details. I wasn't doing anything that I thought was bad, but in terms of asking permission to do certain parts of the physical exam is an expectation. And so, again, I didn't mean any harm by it. Just the same as a lot of people that travel to other countries don't mean harm when they're trying to do good. But this is probably the most important point, the most duh moment point, but also the most difficult to fully implement. So now we're going to take those principles and we're going to move on to our objectives. How do we move forward? So we encourage existing professional groups to assess objectives, structure, monitoring and evaluation, cultural issues and ethical concerns of STEG as they relate to medical education. What I mean by that is we need to do a good job of looking at the programs that are available and assessing what's good, what's bad, and what do we need to do differently. And that's basically what people up here are doing, and I imagine a lot of you are doing. Second, we need data. So I haven't had a single graph on my presentation. And the reason why is because this isn't a hard science. I mean, we're talking about ethics. We're talking about things that are quite abstract. But we can have data. So what I mean by that is not clinical trials. What I mean by that is having databases of short-term experiences. Now, we have databases. But what I think we need to do is better collaborate them and make them more complete so that anyone that wants to go somewhere can't just Google someplace and then jump on a trip and spend $5,000 and you don't know where the money is going. We need to have more universal precautions in terms of this. And then there needs to be more transparency among all of the groups that are offering STEG. Where's the money going? What will you actually be doing when you're going? Finally, standards. Treatment rendered by participants in STEG, whether learners or practitioners, should conform to accepted standards of quality as established by licensing or accrediting bodies in their country of training or practice. So what I mean by this is trainees, so medical students, residents, shouldn't be going and performing procedures that they're not qualified to do just because you're in another country. Bidirectionality, again, Biraj really said this so well. There needs to be a memorandum of understanding between host country and other country. There needs to be specifics, timeline, budget, roles. And this is how you develop a collaboration rather than a paternalistic relationship. There needs to be a curriculum. Organizations and institutions sending trainees should ensure that they have defined curricula, including competencies and pre-departure orientation for travelers. And our last proposal is ethics. So, visiting trainees and institutions participating in STEG should endeavor to ensure that their work is in compliance with local laws and needs as identified by the local community leaders and partners, and that means not just the people that are traveling, and should remember that principles of ethics extend beyond international boundaries. So, in summary of both the last 15 minutes and I think the last hour, we can do better. We can do this together. We have a lot of work to do. So, what I mean by that is the people in this room, I think we have a lot of common interests and goals and can come up with how to do global health better. And I can't wait until we see what the future is. So I want to thank my group. You may recognize some of them. We come from all different places. And I want to thank you guys for listening to me talking about hopefully some interesting points.
Thank you. I hope you've all enjoyed these presentations today. It gives 5 great examples of, you know, finding different ways to help meet the needs of our learners and medical students and other healthcare professionals interested in global health and how to do it responsibly, ethically, and sustainably. And I apologize for trying to keep to time, but they were such great presentations that I wanted to make sure we had time for questions. So please feel free for questions. To Barash, and as far as how has the community responded to where your hospital is, to the program that's been established? Thank you for sharing that. Chris,
You know, I've been in this field of global health education for 12 years, and 4 different medical colleges in the United States. I've never really heard about that, and so that's fair. And, you know, I don't know where they get the data in 4,000 university, but I've never been reached out. I've never had any idea. And it's great. Thank you for bringing it up.
I think that that's a perfect point. It's that in a lot of global health, everybody's doing their own thing. And that's great. People are doing great things. There needs to be more collaboration. And I, for one, as an individual, I don't know a way to propose community can figure that out, because I mean that's one of the problems.
I think that in the platforms like this, for example, a few years, months before, I think these are great initiatives. I just we are starting to have dialogue.
I would highlight that as well. I think our panel shows different levels of interest and stages in training in medical education, and that I think we all have that debate on, is it really necessary to go abroad when we have so many experiences here? But sometimes it is that eye-opening experience of going abroad and then the development down the road and having that mentorship established, that there are ways to continue to practice that locally.
Down to value in terms of the cultural understanding of your patients for seeing them in their country of origin. And you're much more likely to see their home situation. I don't know how many people here have done home visits to their immigrants. I have, but not many people do. But you can see the disparity in the institution here. You're more likely to see it from overseas. And I think the other thing it gives you is it gives you a sense of proportion about A, how privileged we are, and B, how over the top we are, and how we compare to their strength, what goes on elsewhere. And I think that's something that sticks with young people through their lives collectively.
So, obviously, the question is of usefulness. What usefulness would be to see the Bush situation in Zambia or Uganda, to an American physician or any other person that would be applying that here? Number two, most intriguing is the second comment, because obviously if we go overseas and see those places and come back thinking that our place is just fine, that's exactly a good reason to see the disparities in the United States to realize that maybe we're not that bad.
I think that makes you see how terrible, how much
I haven't said much yet, but it's an interesting conversation, great to listen to, and completely agree with what you're saying and what you're saying as well. And I think the most recent definitions of global health that I've been involved with today, which is not a lot, but some of it has been to include underserviced or rural populations in the definition of global health, with a recognition that those populations fit into the same criteria. So I work in emergency departments in Scarborough, which is an area with a heavy immigrant population in Toronto. That's my full-time job, but I also go to southwestern rural Uganda for a part of the year. So, you know, just engaging that in the discussion that you can have global health at home, but maybe not necessarily that you also have to cut out the international portion, that there is a lot to be gained from that as well.
Yeah, so I wanted to say they are not mutually exclusive, obviously, but it's a good opportunity for people who are unable to go and willing to go. This is obviously a good opportunity. Going international setting, it's done well, very well. It's going to be a great opportunity in terms of research-based advocacy, because you're going to shed light into the life of other people who have no other advocate. And so this is our responsibility to really make them bring them to light. Hopefully then someone else picks up, you know, another aspect of it, and they can provide services. So
okay. Oh, one last question on the back.
I'm sorry, I got in the back. It's hard to hear some of the questions here, but I'm sorry, I don't know if you touch on this, but what I wanted to comment on was about learning from the global experience, from the other countries, bringing that back to our U.S., not only to the immigrant communities, but also thinking about working with community health, lay health advisors. There's a lot that we can learn from the experience of all the countries that can be applied here, besides just the cost of money that
Thank you very much. I think it's been a great discussion. Look forward to ongoing features, and we have some panelists up here.
Thank you.